It's an interesting week. And a more interesting week is yet to follow. And my opening story today is a Palm Sunday story, fitting enough. And it's about this family, and the whole family goes off to church on Palm Sunday, all except little Johnny. Little Johnny had to be left at home with a sitter because he had a sore throat, and they didn't think it would be a good idea for him to attend services. And when the family came back, they were all carrying those palm fronds, the palm branches that they had distributed during the service. And Johnny sees them. He says, "Wow, what are those?" And Johnny's father said, "These are palm branches or palm fronds. The people held them over the head of Jesus as he walked by." And little Johnny says, "You got to be kidding me. Just my luck. The one week I don't go, he shows up." Today is Palm Sunday. It's a day that's celebrated on Christian calendars throughout the entire world. And really very rightfully so. Because Palm Sunday really brings a significance to what we are all about on several levels. And so we're going to be discussing a few of those today during my talk. Today is also the final week of the Ancient Secrets of the Lazarus story. Our last opportunity to try to decipher those secrets so that we can use that process, engage in that process in order to come away with a deeper understanding and a more quality life, if you will. And so what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to look at both of these stories, the Lazarus story and the Palm Sunday story, and kind of see how they connect, if they do connect at all. But before we do that, let's do a quick review of the six steps that we've been talking about the past 6 weeks. The opening step was turning away. It's a step that's designed just to give us a pause, a time of quiet, a time of solitude, if you will, in which we can engage in prayer and meditation instead of just emotionally reacting on some knee-jerk reflexive manner. The second step was removing the stone. And what this step is telling us to do is that we have to be about the business of eliminating, taking away anything that might be inhibiting us, prohibiting us from getting to those things in our life that we need to get to attend to in some way. The third step is great expectations, a step of faith. And it's calling upon us to use our God-given power to envision that which is not yet visible, and come into a realization of the possibilities that we could make happen despite evidence to the contrary. The fourth step is upfront thanks. And for me, this step is an exclamation point, if you will, on the previous step. That we could be so filled with confidence, so filled with the Spirit, that we know that what it is that we are trying to bring into realization, bring into manifestation in our lives and in the world around us, already is on the way, and so we rightfully give thanks to Spirit in advance. The fifth step is a strong command, and we talked about that, and the importance of the word, and we actually vocalize that which we wish to see develop and become manifest in the world. And so it has the effect of taking the thoughts from our head, which, you know, in that space are really relatively abstract, and making them incarnate, clothing them, if you will, so that we could deal with them on a physical plane. And the final step that Reverend Jan spoke about last week is drop the old role. And it's a step that tells us that just because we've been a certain way or we've been doing this things a certain way, or we've been thinking about things in a certain way for such a long time and maybe are deeply embedded within us for one reason or another, and our new awareness and our new consciousness, these are no longer necessary. And so it's okay to remove those bandages that bind us so that we could truly be liberated to play things out in our daily lives. We also mentioned briefly about the importance of beginning this process in a spirit of vulnerability. For me, this is a really key step. And I think it's one of the more deeply hidden secrets of the Lazarus blueprint. It's our vulnerability that takes these six steps that we've been talking about and removes them from the realm of the head exclusively and engages them from a place deep within our own hearts. The six steps provide a blueprint, an outline, a map. It is our heart that really drives the bus. So if you really want to see this process work, we have to go beyond using just our brains. And it's important, of course, to engage our heads. It's important to engage our thoughts. But it's really important that we do so in conjunction of who we are deep in our hearts and who we are deep in our souls. I don't know if any of you have tried using this blueprint since we have begun the series, or if you've tried it and you are still waiting to see some level of success. In either case, I would engage you to keep in mind this heartfelt aspect that I'm talking about here and allowing yourself to really be vulnerable in the process. You are spiritual beings, so it's really important that you engage your Christ self. It's really important that you really work your spirit into this entire process. So what does all of this have to do with Palm Sunday? Well, a couple things. First of all, sequentially, chronologically, this whole Palm Sunday celebration that appears in the scriptures comes very much on the heels of the whole Lazarus story. And then at the same time, Palm Sunday, on a metaphysical level and many other levels, opens the doors for really significant things that are going to follow in the scriptures. So I would like to read to you one of the Palm Sunday passages. And the one I chose was from the Gospel of John, precisely because that's a gospel that's been the main focus for the Lazarus story. And I'll share with you that the title above this passage that you may want to keep in mind as you're hearing the words is Jesus' Triumphant Entry into Jerusalem. The next day, the crowd that had come to the festival heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem. So they took branches of palm trees and went out to meet him, shouting, "Hosanna! Blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord, the King of Israel." Jesus found a young donkey and sat on it. As it is written, "Do not be afraid, daughter of Zion. Look, your king is coming, sitting on a donkey's colt." His disciples did not understand these things at first, but when Jesus was glorified, then they remembered that these things had been written of him and had been done to him. So the crowd that had been with him when he called Lazarus out of the tomb and raised him from the dead continued to testify. It was also because they heard that he had performed this sign that the crowd went to meet him. The Pharisees then said to one another, "You see, you could do nothing. Look, the world has gone after him." So two quick things. Immediately preceding that passage, which I shared with you, was a very brief passage that talked about the incredible excitement and clamor that was building up among the Jews because of the Lazarus event. And so the chief priests actually began to plot and conspire to try to assassinate, to kill Lazarus in an attempt to kill the rising spirit that was emerging. Secondly, in a passage of the same account in the Gospel of Luke, there's a line in which the Pharisees are so upset about the excitement that's building up among the crowd that they call out to Jesus and say, "Hey, this is getting out of hand. You got to cool this. You got to get people to quiet down." And Jesus responds to them and says, "If they were to calm down and grow quiet, the stones themselves would sing out in celebration." And we're going to come back to that in just a couple of minutes. The reason that we celebrate Palm Sunday. The reason that we should celebrate Palm Sunday, in all the churches in the world, including Unity, is because it's a celebration of a transformation of consciousness on the part of Jesus. Throughout the Gospel of John, there are various times in which Jesus actually lays claim to being the Messiah. But all of those are, compared to this Palm Sunday thing, are really much smaller in scope and under much more subdued circumstances. The significant difference here is that on Jesus' triumphant march into Jerusalem, this is a full-blown, all-out proclamation, yeah, I am He. And so, in effect, what He's doing is donning that Messiah cape. And so this account that I just shared with you really represents kind of a victory lap on the part of Jesus. And we're all familiar with victory parades, right? I mean, we look at the sports world back in the 90s. We got to march or witness a parade 6 times thanks to the Chicago Bulls. Within the last 9 years, we saw parades because the Blackhawks brought the Stanley Cup home to us on 3 separate occasions. Back in 05, which wasn't so long ago, the White Sox ended a long baseball drought in this town because they swept the World Series in 4 games, and we had a parade. And even the lowly Cubbies, it took them 108 years. But at long last, they broke through. And 5.5 million people lined the streets of Chicago to witness that parade. And who knows, the way things are going, in a little more than a week from now, we might be witnessing another one led by 98-year-old Sister Jean if Loyola could just manage to win a couple of more games. We don't know, not even approximately, the number of people that were engaged in that celebration on that first Palm Sunday. There's just no way that we could tell. We do know that it took place during the time of the Passover celebration, the Passover festival, which means it was a time when Jews from all over the known world, if they could, would travel to Jerusalem to be part of this celebration. We also know that it was incredibly distressing and upsetting to the powers that be. It actually scared them, frightened them, that all of this clamor, because people were going nuts. After all, the Messiah had arrived. At long last, the long-awaited Messiah was on the scene, and He was going to politically and militarily overthrow the hated Roman government. And we also know that even Jesus' closest followers really didn't get the full picture, didn't understand the significance of everything that was going on until way down the line at some distant point in time. Before we try to tie all of this together and see how it relates to the Lazarus blueprint, let's take a couple of minutes to look at some of the metaphysics of the story that I shared with you. And always, 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 when you're doing the metaphysics things, it's important to remember that you are all of the characters in the story. And so we are told that Jesus rides into Jerusalem on a donkey. And just as a sidebar here, this was significant because this was the fulfillment of a prophecy that had been made back by the prophet Zechariah. But the donkey represents that part of us that is meek. It also represents that part of us that is stubborn. Stubborn, perhaps, because we are aware of our weaknesses and we're not all that anxious to show them and let people see what they look like. The palms represent power. And so through the waving of the palms, we have the experience of being able to tap into that divine substance and use it to mold and shape things. And palms continue to be kind of a symbol of power, even in the world today. The stone that I mentioned from the Luke Gospel represents our densest consciousness. It represents that part of us that maybe has been built up from childhood, of you have to do things a certain way. It might represent those parts that go way back in time in which we tend to regard ourselves in some sort of shadow of discomfort or shadow of shame for some reason. It probably represents our deepest addictions, the ones that really have a grip on us. And so we learn from the story, but in the light of the Christ, even these aspects about ourselves will be able to emerge and sing forth the incredible wonder of who and what we are. And then we're told that Jesus marches into Jerusalem. Jerusalem represents that place where peace abides. Peace is the ultimate prize here. Peace is not about a lack of conflict in our lives. Peace is not about a lack of illness in our lives. Peace is not about not having trouble in our life. Peace is all about the presence of God in our lives, even in the face of all of these things. Jerusalem also represents the kingdom. Jerusalem represents abiding in spirit, because we have come to recognize, realize, and appreciate that spirit always is abiding in us. Jerusalem represents the pot of gold at the end of the Lazarus blueprint. Jesus marched into Jerusalem to signify that he had a shift, a transformation of consciousness, and it also represented still another greater transformation of consciousness yet to come. When you embark upon a process of change and transformation, such as the Lazarus blueprint, it is a difference maker on multiple levels. And so, for example, if you say, you know, I'm going to use this Lazarus blueprint because my health is not quite what it should be, you are very likely to realize a shift in that and experience a healing, at least on a certain level. But it also is going to have a spillover effect to other areas of your life. If you're struggling financially in some sort of a crisis and you say, okay, I'm going to give this blueprint thing a try, you very likely will come to better realize your prosperity, but it will also have an overall heightened change, a shift in your general consciousness. That could be a very scary proposition. It could be scary to the people around you, and it could be scary to you yourself. A few years ago, I decided to make a significant change in a relationship that had been operating at a status quo level for a very long time. And when I did this, my daughter came up to me and she said to me, I understand what you did. I understand why you did it. I understand why you had to do it. But I'm also telling you, as far as I'm concerned, it would have been way better if things had gone unchanged. And I had a similar experience at the workplace. There wasn't any kind of a dramatic shift. There wasn't any kind of a dramatic change. It was something that was very subtle. But people sensed the difference. And they were upset and distressed about it. Why? Because they couldn't go back into the files that were stored in their brains, those things that were regimented and told them how they should act and be in a certain situation and how life was going to be easier for them if they did certain things certain ways. All of a sudden, they had to find new ways of operating. If you want a little bit better of appreciation of what I'm trying to describe here, take Lazarus' blueprint and use it in one of the relationships in your life. It doesn't mean that a relationship has to be bad. The Lazarus blueprint will work on a perfectly healthy relationship and should have the result of that relationship being even stronger as you go forward. And I think what you very likely may encounter is pushback. I think you might encounter pushback from your spouse, your partner, your friend, whoever it is. And don't be surprised if you start to feel an internal pushback coming deep within from yourself. It's these kinds of things that have caused the ancient secrets to become secret and remain secret for 2,000 years. Any story that you would ever read in a book or any Hollywood movie that involved a treasure, a really valuable treasure, it's always hidden at some point in the story. So maybe it's hidden at the bottom of the sea, maybe it's hidden in some godforsaken cavern someplace, or maybe it's just buried under the earth. And we hide that treasure for lots of reasons. Maybe we're just not ready for it. Maybe we're afraid that somebody's going to come along and take our treasure away from us. Or maybe our treasure frightens us, scares us. Because we understand if we were to begin to take that treasure and work it and put it into circulation, it necessarily is going to deeply affect our lives. Palm Sunday, metaphysically, is the revelation of that treasure that has been buried within us for far, far too long of a time. Yesterday, over 500,000 demonstrators descended on Washington, D.C. in the March for Our Lives protests. There were protests throughout major cities throughout the United States, and there were protests that took place on foreign soil as well. And I really think that despite all of the naysayers telling these kids who led this and organized this whole thing, come on, kids, get real. This isn't going to make a difference. All you're doing is wasting an incredible amount of time and money and energy on the whole thing, and you've got no chance. But the message that's coming from these demonstrations, as far as I am concerned, is our greatest treasure is our very God-given life. And we are not going to allow it to become buried under some political agenda or any kind of a financially motivated mindset. And as I was early this morning looking at some of the news stories, it just occurred to me, what could it have meant? What could we have done if the churches throughout this great country of ours not only distributed palms on this day, but we showed up along the roadside and we waved those palms over the heads of those kids as they were marching by? If you look at the Lazarus blueprint, not as an instruction manual, but if you could just picture it in some way as kind of a spiritual novel, then Palm Sunday would be the ending of that novel. And it would be an ending that in effect said, and they lived happily ever after. And of course, if you're at all familiar with the gospel stories, you say, Reverend Mike, you're out of your mind. We know what happened after Palm Sunday. And it wasn't a case of living happily ever after. But I stand by my words here. And the reason that I'm saying is, yes, there is a sequel to that book. There is a sequel to that story. And this week, during the Holy Week, we get to work that through and play that out, and it's all going to culminate a week from today on Easter Sunday. So I really think that it is something for us to consider and something for us to ponder during this very special week. We are incredible creatures. We're filled with the light of God. And we talk about this, and we talk about this, and we talk about this. An important part of that light is allowing it to be seen. It is to be seen not just by the people around us, but to see it in our own eyes every morning as we look into the mirror and we get ready to go through the day and share the gifts, even the gifts of trouble that invariably come in our direction. And let those be reminders to us of how incredibly alive that we are. And let's just allow even the stones in our life to cry out in true celebration of that incredible reality. And all God's people say, Amen. Amen.